Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, August 30th, 2017. With me today, I have Kelly Gaumont. And how are you, Kelly?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
I am all right. And John Martellaro, how are you?
I'm doing well. Hey.
Excellent.
Hey. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, John.
I'm so glad you're both here. And I can just feel the love in the room. John, yesterday you wrote what to me is just a really great article that I found to be incredibly helpful. And I thought we kind of needed to dive into this a little bit, just in case there are more questions. So what I'm talking about is you wrote a piece yesterday where you explained what happens with resolution on our televisions if we're going to 4K because of the new Apple TV that's supposedly coming out with 4K support. And so can you just give us the quick synopsis of exactly what happens with all this resolution and the 4K and all of that?
Right. The reason I wrote the article was because I surmised that a lot of people who've held off on buying a 4K TV may be galvanized into action now that Apple, being Apple customers as we are, is very strongly rumored, almost certain to come out with a 4K fifth generation Apple TV that supports HDR. So I thought it would be helpful to explain what's going to happen. How's it going to interact with your TV system? If you have a standard high definition TV, will it work? Yes, but you won't get HDR and you won't get 4K content. It'll just simply display in 1080p as before. If you have a TV that you bought, a 4K TV that you bought a while back that doesn't support HDR, the Apple TV does, and so you're going to lose the metadata. But if you have a modern 4K TV or you're planning on buying one that supports HDR, then they'll marry very nicely. The Apple TV will pass on the metadata for HDR to your new TV. I talked about what happens if you have an older Apple TV and you don't upgrade, but you have a 4K TV, what the picture will look like. And I talked about scalers. Some people plug their devices straight into the inputs of the Apple, of the 4K TV, mm-hmm. or the high definition TV, and they let the TV speakers do the work, or they buy a sound bar. But if you have an audio video receiver in the middle to drive high tech speakers, and it's using HDMI 1.4, you're not going to get the full capability of ultra high definition. So you may need a new AV receiver to pass through all the good stuff. I talked about cables.
Why don't we dive into the cables real quick? So let's look at a setup like mine, because that one's easy for me to visualize.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a 1080p television right now. I have a third generation, or are we on fourth generation? What is
fourth?
Fourth generation Apple TV, and I have HDMI cable connecting the television to the Apple TV. And I'm guessing for a lot of people, that's probably a pretty standard setup. And so if I start replacing stuff, I get a new Apple TV, I get a new television, do I need to buy a new cable? Is my HDMI cable not going to be up to snuff?
Well, it just so happens I was in Best Buy last night talking to an expert Magnolia installer consultant. And we talked about cables. And he said, yeah, I read that CNET article. And he said, you know, your HDMI cables are probably going to be okay if you set up an HDMI system, a high-definition TV in the last 10 years. If you bought some discount cables for $5 that are a little on the shaky side, they may have trouble with the audio, surprisingly. But if you bought a, you know, standard HDMI cable for your 1.4 system, mm-hmm. for, you know, $20, it's probably going to be just fine. But he said that there is some issue, and I have yet to check this out, but I'll just report what he said. He said some of the older cables, the really older, have trouble with audio, and he has some not very expensive 3 or 4 foot HDMI cables that are modern. And he's not trying to talk you into cables that are so-called, you know, 4K HDMI cables, but they are rated at 18 gigabits per second. And that seems to be an industry standard. And he said some of the older cables may not be 18 gigabits capable or pass the audio without distortion. So,
well, and something let's point out that research. Even though this person may not be trying to talk you into 4K HDMI cables, two things about that. First, they're not a thing. A cable capable of carrying 4K video is different than I need to charge you $10 extra for an HDMI cable. So the next thing is, don't fall for that.
Oh yeah.
And
oh yeah.
And
he was very knowledgeable, and he was aware of this psychology.
Right. Well, we've seen this before, though, and
he's seen test equipment where there's a distortion test for the audio,
right.
Not the video.
And I'm not saying that his results are wrong, but I'm saying people don't have to go out and spend exorbitant sums of money until you know whether or not you're having a problem.
If you buy a good modern HDMI cable from Monoprice for $15-$20 for three footer, you're fine.
Right.
All right, if you already have one, you're probably fine.
So the HDMI cable that I'm using today with my Sony TV and my Apple TV is probably going to work just fine when I upgrade components later on.
You know, and if you can't see a difference, and if there's no apparent degradation and you don't hear any problems, that's the acid test right there.
All right. So now I have another question for you, John. I'm looking at this fall as a pretty expensive season because we have new iPhones coming. We have a new Apple Watch coming and
HomePod.
And we have the HomePod coming plus this new Apple TV. So I'm thinking that a lot of people are going to be looking at these purchases and thinking, you know, I really want that new Apple TV, but with everything else I'm buying, I don't think I can afford to upgrade my television today. So if you buy a new Apple TV that does 4K and you have a 1080p television, are you going to see any improvement in your image quality?
That's a very interesting technical issue. I've been reading up on that. It turns out that your Apple TV, and I'm still researching this, but I'm pretty sure it will fall back to 1080p. And you will simply send a 1080p signal to the 1080p TV, and the resolution will be no better. So there's no benefit to try to sending 4K content to your Apple TV, except to your regular high-definition TV. Except there is a very geeky factor called chroma subsampling, which is very exotic. And what happens is that most broadcast videos and 420 in order to save bandwidth. So some of the chroma information and luminance information is duplicated amongst pixels instead of individual pixelized. When you have one 4K pixel, when you have four 4K pixels that are reduced down to one HD pixel, mm-hmm. you don't have that dilution. So every high definition pixel gets the 444. And that can result in a slightly viewable improvement in the image, even though the resolution is no better. Probably nobody could ever notice it, but it is a kind of a cool thing.
What we're calling this falls pretty firmly. Like, I know it's a legitimate thing that happens. I'm not saying it's not real, but this falls under what I always called a saying so feature. And we've talked about this before when we've talked about, like, if the last Apple TV was going to be 4K and things like that. And that is a feature that gives you no noticeable advantage except that you get to say so. And, you know, the eyeball, for example, can only detect a contrast ratio of whatever. And it's like I don't remember what the number is, but it's not like a super duper high number. So you walk into a place that sells flat screen TVs and they all are showing off that they have a contrast ratio of 10,000 to one or whatever it is. You can't tell.
Oh, those are fake.
And you are paying for that. You are paying for the marketing that tells you that it's a 10,000 to one contrast ratio so that you can go home and hang that on the wall and tell all your friends that it's a 10,000 to one contrast ratio, but nobody's going
to
know.
But more to the point, OLED displays go very black because they're not backlit. And so you get a much better contrast ratio because they get so black. And that's, I would advise people who are thinking about a new 4K TV from this day forward to really seriously consider OLED, because it's the closest thing to plasma you can get in terms of the black levels and the quickness of the response of the pixels. OLED pixels are very quick to respond. And so if you're only running a 60 hertz system, like my 60 hertz plasma, it has no trouble with a fast puck in ice hockey because of the quickness of the pixel response. So OLED is really the way to go. And that's where the contrast ratio kicks in.
Right. But again, like, what your eye can perceive is a certain point, and they are advertising to you a number that is far beyond when your eye is ever going to discern.
I haven't seen people brag about contrast ratios in a long time. That's become so discredited.
Right, but I haven't shopped for...
even trying anymore.
I personally have, thankfully, not had to shop for television in the last 4 or 5 years, so I haven't actually done any of that. But I remember it being a huge thing that everybody wanted to call out to me when they were showing off their televisions, and I went...
Nobody believes
it. Yeah, but I know that my eyeball can only see this. You know, like, what are you doing? So now
what they've replaced that with is HDR, which is a much more quantifiable, visible advantage for
which is high dynamic range.
Right.
Yeah. So, and I'm gonna add this footnote tip for people who may be in the market for a television. There will be times when you will need the remote control. So, and usually in the store, they don't want to show you one. Ask for it. They have it. And, you know, they just usually like run everything differently and don't always have the remote available to you. But you'll need it once in a while for setting something up or whatever. Even if you have some sort of universal setup at home, try it out. And then the next thing you want to do is turn the TV off with the remote and turn it on with the remote. Because one of the things that I found when we were shopping for televisions, and again, this was a while ago, but there were televisions that just took forever to turn on. And if I had bought that television and sat there waiting, you know, up to 10 seconds to find out for sure whether or not the TV was turning on.
Kelly, it's the HDCP handshaking. If the processors are slow, they can't handle the encryption handshaking. Mm. Modern TVs have much faster processors. And that encryption handshaking for HDCP goes very fast these days.
But it's a thing that you want to know. Like, am I always is it like, because it was almost like waiting for the old cabinet television we had in my house growing up, like to warm up, you know?
My old plasma takes about 15 seconds to do the handshaking and it's annoying.
Yeah. And if you turn the TV on and off more than, once a day, then this is going to drive you up a wall. So it's a thing to look at. And then the other thing that I like to do when I look is, because again, occasionally this is a thing that needs to happen, is when I finally get them to give me the remote for the TV, I push the menu button and see what the UI is like for what's on the TV.
Yeah. And then you cry.
Sometimes, yes. It was an influencer in the decision that we made on the TV that we purchased most recently. And part of that, and here's the entertaining thing about that, is that I'm like, I want to see what the remote looks like. And Mr. Kelly looked at me and went, you are such an Apple user.
Here's another tip, Kelly. I found this out from the Magnolia guy last night at Best Buy. He said he has one of these Sony OLEDs and the Android app for Netflix isn't as good as feeding it from an external source like a Roku or an Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, what are you planning to do? And I said, I'm going to let the Android system just sit there and I'm going to be treating the TV as a monitor and I'm going to be driving it from all these external sources. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to have the Wi-Fi turned on. I'm not going to keep it separated from the internet. And he said, great idea. Just use your TV as a monitor, drive it with your Apple TV, let your Apple TV do all the work, let your Apple TV manage the internet security with TVOS, and you'll be in great shape. So there's another hint.
I like how he thinks, or she.
Yeah, we turned off all the stuff on our television. And I'm glad that we did, because my father-in-law was more than happy to let us do all the legwork and then just ended up buying the same TV that we bought. And he didn't turn off that stuff at first and started asking us, like, does your TV ever do this? And and it, there was like a weird banner that would pop up occasionally at the bottom of the TV with like a straight up advertisement. I'm like, no, our TV. I'm like, what are you running on this? And he's like, oh, you know, I just sat down, turned on all the, I'm like, oh,
so once a month,
here we go.
The Wi-Fi on your 4K TV and see if there's any firmware updates, apply them for security and then get it off the internet.
Yeah. Cause it's not, well, I mean, there are a host of reasons. Yeah, there are a host of reasons why that's not the greatest idea, but that was one of them. So if you're looking for a television, these are things that I learned the hard way. And so I'm passing the savings in both grief and
heartache. Do you have a 4K TV, Kelly?
No, ours is not 4K. I don't remember.
This might be the year because, exactly. You know, the hardware is getting way ahead of the software. All the new modern TVs since CES 2017, they support HDR10 and Dolby Vision and maybe even HLG, Hybrid Log Gamma. And so everybody is in the broadcast industry, and most 4K content is now streaming. Very few people have ultra-high-definition Blu-ray players, and there's very little content on ultra-high-definition Blu-ray discs. So most 4K content comes through Netflix and Amazon. And so because of the bandwidth constraints, most 4K content has been slow to add all these special features. So if you buy a modern 2017 4K TV, you will be future-proofed for years, I believe. And then David Katzmeier at CNET also said this when he was on my podcast.
Quite honestly, I am still like not quite entirely over TV shopping fatigue from the last TV we bought. And it was like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, there's a reason why people tend to go on average 7 years before a television purchase.
And we upgraded, when we went flat with everything, we bought like 3 TVs over the course of about 2 or 3 years. So we were kind of, and of course, Mr. Kelly, because we weren't done, kind of always had half an eye on that. So we would always like walk through that section of a store when we went somewhere. And we used to get to shop actually at Magnolia when they were an individual entity. Outside of Best Buy, when they were their own thing, they had one here and we shopped there a lot, and we bought occasionally, but we shopped there a lot. And it was confusing, and everybody has their own standard and everybody has their own name for their own standard. And it's really hard to figure out. So have a clear idea of a couple of things about your TV.
That's why I wrote the article yesterday.
What you want. Overview. Like, is it going to be in a bright room? Is it going to be in a dark room? Are you going to mostly play movies? Are you going to mostly play TV? Because those are things that can influence your decision. And measure that wall before you leave the house. Put it in a little note on your phone and know how much wall you have to work with, or how much entertainment center you have to work with, or whatever, because you don't want to end up like sold on a 70 inch TV that really needs to, you know. But in real life, it's a 55-inch space.
Speaking of 70-inch TVs, the Magnolia guy I was talking to last night said, be very careful with these 65 and above. They're so thin, there's no structure in there to prevent them from bending. So if you grab a 70-inch TV by the edge and move it,
you could
damage it.
You could crack the screen because of the flex, yeah.
Yeah, it's because it's so thin.
Yeah, so things to consider. And I think sometimes that gets... what you wanted or what you're aiming for can sometimes get lost in whatever the salesperson is telling you or showing off or whatever. And so kind of have an idea before you go and look at what some of the technology that's being advertised to you actually is and does.
And you don't have to go be an expert. Alliance sticker on the
box. You don't have to be an expert, but just know some basic stuff. Like read John's article and go get a cup of coffee, come back and read it again. And then you should be like reasonably prepared to start going and asking questions.
All right. So we are out of time, but before we go, I want to let everyone know that Amazon updated the Echo Dot and Echo Show through the Alexa app so that you can now, stream music in multiple rooms simultaneously. So I tested it and it works beautifully. It works so well that my second Echo Dot, which does not have external speakers, it's probably going to now because it worked perfectly. So I did a how-to on how to set that up so that you can tell your Echo in one room that you want to stream music and have it across all your devices or just a set of them.
Now, I don't want to give away the ending, but you basically have to just set up a group and then put them in the group, right? That's so it's like Hue lights?
Yeah. Yeah. That's, okay. That's pretty much how it works. Yeah. So, but I've got a how-to, and I'll make sure it's in today's show notes. And with that, we are so out of time. Kelly, thank you for being here today.
I just wanted to say really fast, I am fascinated with where the Echo is going, and I really want to talk about that more. So we will have to discuss that in the future.
Yes, we will.
And thank you for having me.
It's always awesome. John, thank you for being here.
Oh, you're very welcome. Bye, Kelly.
Bye, John.
And listeners, thank you for joining us. We will see everyone again tomorrow.